you're missing what real people are going through. I think, again, going back to our previous conversation about how the Democrats are doing, I think a lot of the more ambitious Democrats recognize this disconnect and are starting to speak directly to voters, you know, through their social media accounts, through TikTok and so on. They're speaking directly to voters, and they're not waiting around for some strategist to tell them whether it's good or bad to do whatever they're doing. They're making their own decisions, and they're making decisions on whether it's going to fight or to fold, and that's a good thing.
Well, despite my reticence to want to talk politics these days, it's always a pleasure to get your insights, and I appreciate the work that you do at the editorial board. I hope our listeners will go and check out editorialboard.com. John Storr, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Freddie Hubbard, Louis Prima, and Mose Allison. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO's fall membership drive is just around the corner. Help us kick off our KBOO Out Loud Drive on August 20th for National Radio Day, where we'll bring you more of our independently made content, KBOO stories, and KBOO testimonials all day long.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my wall. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is artist Hannah Tice. Her show Specimen is on now through August 30th at Blackfish Gallery in the Pearl District. Thanks for doing Art Focus again, Hannah.
Thank you, Joseph. It's great to be back.
Back by popular demand, I'd say. Not that anyone who ever listens to this show ever writes in and says anything, but I like your work, so that's why you're back.
Thank you very much.
But it's very different from last time. Last time, it was all black stuff with lots of frames and things that spun, but it was all black. What was it called? I love that show.
That show was called Apelion, and it was about my relationship specifically with depression. So naturally, the visuals went a little bit darker.
But the concept was the farthest point in orbit from, you know, a planet going or something going around something else, and the furthest you got from, you explain.
Apelion is the scientific term for the farthest point in an orbit, because orbits are not circular, they're ellipses. And for me, I loved the allegory of my own personal aphelion being a representation of my relationship with depression. And as somebody who lives with bipolar 2, I experience a lot of depression frequently, and aphelion was the capturing of what it feels like to be lost out in space, but to also know you'll come back in orbit.
Right, exactly. So this show is completely different. It's sort of rainbow colors of glass in little wooden frames and multiple layers. So we're looking at one called Amalgamation. So it's, you took rectangles of glass, which are frame glass, and then you put alcohol and alcohol ink on the glass. And then what did you do?
At that point, I drop a couple drops of alcohol ink color on it and maybe use my breath to move the liquid around on the glass. But at that point, I leave my studio, I go take a walk, I let the glass dry, and about a half an hour, I come back and I get to see what the universe has created for me.
Mm-hmm. So you get this kind of, if you just look at the black stuff, it's that sort of pattern. You know, there are solid black, and then there are lots of little dots. So it could be like a satellite photo of an estuary or something like that, or it could be the sky. Lots of tiny little dots that just naturally form when a liquid evaporates.
The thing that I love about the textures that present themselves in these alcohol ink glass panes is that they can be so referential of so many things in nature or in man-made things. Texture, especially this type of texture that's very random, tends to reveal so many associations for us. And I love hearing any associations that people see in my work, and I think they're all accurate.
Mm-hmm. So you use these rectangles, which are kind of 4 by 6 inches, maybe, and stack them up. There's a row of three on the bottom. There's two at the top. Then behind them, there's another layer of bigger pieces. And then behind all of that are two rows of what look like microscope slides. You know, those long rectangles of thin glass. And all of them, you know, the colors are all interfering with each other. So you've got the yellow and the orange and then blue in the background and black. What sort of process did you go through to sort of layer the colors?
What I wanted to do with this piece was to capture a chunk of time in what it feels like to live with bipolar 2. I love the idea of individual microscope slides being a slice of one day, you know, one snapshot of one moment. But mixing in these strips of microscope slides with bigger panes of glass, my goal was to show the bigger movements of life, the swaths of emotion that can come to the surface or consume us or work underneath the scenes. I wanted to capture what it looks like and feels like to go through the motions of extreme emotions, you know, up, down, and mixed, because usually it's not just happy or sad. It's quite a mixture of good and bad.
Mm-hmm. Did the colors have any significance? I mean, do they relate to emotions?
For me personally, I think that warmer colors relate to feeling escalated and cooler colors relate to feeling dipped below baseline.
Hang on, these are your words for happy and sad.
Yeah, basically. I would say like warmth is an association with happiness and coolness is an association with sadness. And I think that's like a pretty typical, Western look at color theory and how emotion relates to it. Sometimes I break out of that a little bit. I do think that like a fluorescent orange or a really bright yellow actually tends to feel more alarming. And, you know, with bipolar 2, you can feel escalated, and sometimes it feels happy and sometimes it can feel quite alarming, like the floor might fall out from under your feet. So as much as warm definitely relates to a feeling good, sometimes it breaks the ceiling of that into the alarming. Mm-hmm.
When you chose these different size pieces, you know, why did you layer them in such a way? You don't really mix three colors, you know, it's usually two, and there's a lot of black. Were you thinking of like blending colors?
A little bit, but as I started to play with this layout was a wrestling match, and I think initially I had more of a mixture of colors. And as I started to revise the layout over and over, it took a couple of days to get it right, the colors ended up gravitating towards similar colors. So smaller microscope slides that show yellow sit behind a pane that's red and another pane that's orange. I wanted the layers to coordinate a little bit to show that, you know, if I'm feeling, you know, you take one microscope slide and it's yellow and orange, I must be feeling pretty good and happy that day. And the other bigger panes of glass show how like a mood or a moment can stretch beyond a day and impact a week or a month, and then how it can fade into and dissolve into a feeling of sadness beyond that. So for me, the layers coordinate to help tell a more complete timeline narrative.
Mm-hmm. This piece, Amalgamation, is parked completely at the other end of the room. It's just a little It's the little room at the back of Blackfish, if you're looking for it. And it's opposite this piece, which is the postcard photo specimen. And this is four rows of vertical microscope slides set in a wooden frame with the horizontals of different lines, but they're all, the glass slides are all lined up vertically, and the colors are a sort of mixture of reds, blues, and blacks, and the staining, as it were, is usually at the bottom of the glass, as though the top is usually clear and then the liquid was started at the bottom or moved upwards. And they're really, they kind of look like, you know, kind of Damien Hirst sort of drug paraphernalia or stuff to do with, I don't know what you call it, pharmaceuticals. Why is this one so orderly compared to the other one opposite, which is so kind of layered and complicated?
So specimen actually predates the other work by 4 years. I wanted to bring back this piece because it is a very special piece, and I believe it deserved its own show and deserved new work to go along with it. This piece represents a 100-day mood journal from 4 years ago, pretty close to when I was diagnosed with bipolar 2. I started tracking my mood in an Excel sheet. You know, it's very important to track your mood, to be aware of where you're at any time. But it was really hard for me to discern, oh, do I feel like a 6 or a 7 today? So I remember this moment where I was in the studio and I had my laptop up with my mood chart, and I looked up on my shelf. I had a box of microscope slides that I had purchased just as a cheap way to have glass on hand to start to do some material tests. So I took the box down, took it out, and I started painting on them. I had gouache nearby. It's usually my paint that I have on hand. And I hadn't set out to do anything, and I didn't do any material tests ahead of time, but I just started painting every single day on a microscope slide what I was feeling. And I would take a second microscope slide and sandwich the paint together. And over time, the paint dried and cracked and revealed its own texture, which was really beautiful. Initially, I was a little bothered because the liquidity, the smoothness evaporated out of the paint, and what was left was quite crackly and textured. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I came to really love it because that also shows how our memory works. Our memory is not this amazing hard drive where we can just recall what we did on a day. And as more time went by, the paint dried and cracked more, and finally arrived at this place where it has this amazing texture. And I really grew to love it as a reflection of the deterioration of memory. Bipolar also impacts memory, and I have my own issues with memory, and so I think that it, in a way, unintentionally forced me to come to this acceptance around it, you know?
What do you mean? You forget stuff?
Oh, I forget so much.
Like what?
Bipolar can have an interesting effect on cognition and memory. Our brains are wired, you know, slightly differently, and any sort of neurodivergent brings different skills to the table with different costs. And for me personally, I have a really bad memory with people, dates, functioning, just working everyday memory. I'm really bad at remembering events where I met people. And that's okay. That's just, you know, my memory is what it is. And I know that part of it might be rooted in the bipolar. You know, it has an impact on memory in that way. But I love that this piece kind of captures it and highlights the fact that, like, my brain is beautiful in the way that it works. And it does so many other things that some other brains don't. You know, I think that my creative thinking, my divergent thinking, is really strong. And I love that. So that's okay that my memory is a little bit bad. I've learned to always introduce myself to people as, you look familiar to me, can you remind me of your name? And just admit to the fact that I'm really bad at memory, and that's okay. So this piece shows, I think, accurately, just the deterioration of remembering what happened on a day. At the same time, I can look at one of these slides that has an intense yellow or orange and red to it and know, oh, that must have been a pretty overwhelming day. Or a different slide that has just a little bit of transparent gray on it and know that was probably just a pretty mediocre day. So even though I don't remember what happened on these days, I can kind of intuit based on the paint that is there.
So you'd paint on a slide and then take another slide and sandwich it, and it would somehow dry?
And they, you can probably pry them apart if you wanted to. They're a little delicate in that way. This is before I got more process-oriented with my newer work, which is much more sturdy. So it's literally just the paint and a little bit of water that's holding them together at this point. And you can almost like feel the fragility just looking at them. They feel that way almost.
So they all are, you know, these incredibly complex patterns. They're kind, you know, they're like kind of smoke or dried mud, or you know, microscopic images of plants or something, or seaweed. But the colors, you know, a lot of the colors are very consistent. The blue is the same blue over and over, and the red. What'd you call that red?
Ooh, probably like a pure cadmium, I'd say. Very, very fire truck red.
Were you mixing on a palette, or were you using what kind of brush?
I think most of these were out of the tube. I wasn't doing much mixing at the time. Maybe a little bit with like a little purpley or to darken and mix blue into black. But you can tell there's mostly a division between blue and black. They stand as separate colors. I think that in some ways I wanted to clearly call out the different things that were happening each day rather than mixing all the colors together and that's the color I feel that day. That wouldn't be accurate of my experience. I think that feeling the different emotions separately, even if it's feeling them at the same time, they feel and stand out separately to me. And so I wanted to make sure that the ultramarine was always there as ultramarine if I was feeling ultramarine that day, to the point where I was joking around that like, oh, today's an ultramarine day, I guess, you know, it's, I wanted some consistency in that way. I think my newer work, I keep some of that consistency. I did a lot of color, custom color mixing in my new work to create a cohesive palette, but the specimen piece was 4 years ago, and I was painting mostly just the gouache that I had on hand, and I really enjoy the fact that the colors are distinct. I think that they accurately show, oh, you can feel really irritable, you can feel really depressed, and also some happiness all in one day.
Was it supposed to be therapeutic? Like, one, you're expressing yourself, and two, you're keeping a kind of spreadsheet of your mood?
I think it was purely expression, almost defiant against the Excel spreadsheet. I'm not a very Excel-oriented person. I'm not a very, you know, analytical person in that way, or even consistent with those tools. And so part of me was like, oh, I'm gonna paint. That feels better to me than being a five or a six. So it felt almost like an artistic protest at what I knew I had to do, but I'm also gonna do this thing over here that feels like I'm striving for a more accurate look. Even though, you know, to other people they may not get how accurate it is, but to me it feels exactly accurate.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Hannah Tice. Her show Specimen is on now at Blackfish Gallery in the Pearl through the 30th of August. So, Hannah, you have two other big pieces oriented differently. So the frames are a bit more elaborate, different thicknesses of this white wood, and bigger pieces of glass. And then there are inserted, there are the microscope slides. One of them is like a ladder with black rungs that going up to orange and yellow. And there's a lot more blue and sort of turquoise in the larger panels on the left. This one is called Escalation. And you used that term before to describe the cycle of what goes on in bipolar 2. What is escalation?
So it's bipolar is experienced differently by every single person, be it one or two, and even within each of the divisions of bipolar. So for me, bipolar 2, I'm pretty familiar at this point with my cycle. And usually before I was more actively managing my bipolar, you know, I look back in my life and can kind of piece these patterns together. But my pattern would usually be 1 to 4 times a year, I would experience a hypomanic episode where I would have an escalated mood for 3 to 10 days. It's hypomania is the feeling of feeling your best self, your most capable self. Like you could answer all the emails and go to all the happy hours and accomplish all the things on your to-do list, and you sleep 2 hours a night and you do very productive things. Before I was medicated, I think my relationship with hypomania was that hypomania would insert itself into my life and I would do creative things with it when it was here. You know, I would do painting, I would do constructions, I would clean the house in a way that I hadn't in years. So it was always this place of supreme productivity, but it came at a cost always. And usually what followed was anywhere from 2 to 8 months of depression, which is typical bipolar too. You spend more time in a depressive state. The hard part about escalation and feeling up and feeling hypomania is that it is good. It does wonderful things. You get a lot done. You feel the most confident, but it always comes at a cost. It's not a sustainable state to be in. And in this piece, I wanted to show what felt like a very colorful upswell, because it does feel intoxicating. It feels, you know, you don't detach from reality like you might with mania in bipolar one, but you do feel intoxicated in a way where you are tunnel vision doing all the things that you want to be doing and ignoring everything else, be it responsibilities or relationships. So this piece captures the beautiful, colorful burst of what that feels like, as well as the cloudiness, the darkness, the anxiety that can come with an escalation, and almost the promise of a crash that comes next. So the color is balanced out by some cloudiness, some darker texture to give that indication that while it might be a burst of color, not all is well, and there will be a price to pay.
So were you aware of it at the time, oh, this is my cycle, and I'm going to do this, and I fear there may be some dark times ahead?
I think most of my life, like I think about my 20s, and I had no idea. I can look back and absolutely see that pattern over and over and over, you know, taking jobs, quitting jobs every 2 years, turning over. I can track the pattern now looking back. I didn't become aware of it until I started to suspect depression came into my life in a big way in my late 20s and early 30s. And so that was the first foray into exploring my mental health. And it wasn't until I found a much better therapist fit that he actually let me know that he suspects that I have bipolar, not depression. And that was a big breakthrough, because diagnosing bipolar 2 is quite difficult because it presents mostly as depression.
So they give you antidepressants and it doesn't have any effect.
Exactly. Or it makes things worse, which is what happened to me. I was on antidepressants for a few years. And
what were your flavors?
I think initially it was Zoloft. I think I was on Zoloft for a year and nothing got better. Yeah. big name in the game. So it's one of those things where, you know, it takes a really skilled therapist to spot it. And coming to him and saying, oh, I've been on antidepressants and I'm not getting better, that's a yellow flag. Oh, I have this pattern of doing projects and then not doing anything for months. Oh, that's a flag. And he pieced it together for me, and that arrived at my diagnosis. So I had an awareness a few years before my diagnosis of these patterns and relying on these bursts, but it wasn't until my diagnosis that I really arrived at a point of knowing.
And then I suppose this is a companion piece, right? Rumination. Again, it's big panels, you know, like a foot square of glass, and the wooden frames, they're kind of set in this sort of window frame shape, but they have these little panels like pads that stick it to the wall. Where does rumination come into your art?
So along with hypomania, the depressive episodes to me were always a period of thinking, of editing, of mulling over. Not these big bursts where I'm making 20 works in one night, but instead a real contemplation of my artistic practice over 6 months. I'm not very prolific when I'm in a depressive state. I don't do much making. I also forgive myself for not doing much making because I have been through a pattern of shame around it, and it really inhibits me and you know, makes it exacerbates the problem of depression. So at this point, I accept if I am making, that's great, and if I'm not, that's okay. But this piece captures what for me feels like a long stretch of depression. You know, some of my depression episodes are quite intense, but most of the time they're mid-range and they last a long time. And I can just float my way through them, not making much, not feeling much. But knowing that this period is also really good for reading, for finding inspiration, for doing the things that aren't the making. It is a lot more of just like the simmering in the background, and knowing that I'll arrive back at a place of a spark and toward the right side of the piece. If you think of the slides as a timeline, there's a little bit of a spark at the very end that kind of...
A bit of pink and yellow.
Yeah, the pink and yellow toward the end sort of serve as like a note of, oh, this is changing, something's shifting. There's something will be different in the future.
Mm-hmm. But you've got a job, right? A graphic artist, so you can carry on doing your job.
Yeah, I think I've gone through different bouts of doing my job well and not well throughout my career. You know, at this point, I do freelance on the side, and I also took up a part-time job recently to fill in my income in a way that doesn't tax my mental health and doesn't tax my creativity. So I feel like I'm always in a place of finding new balance.
What's the job?
I work at a tile company, and I make the tile myself, and I drive a forklift. I'm forklift certified.
Which tile company?
It's a tile company called Clay House in Southeast Portland. They make awesome tile, cool shapes, all the colors you could want. Yeah.
Well, you design them or you just put them in the oven?
I punch them out of the wet clay and I run the big extruder that makes the clay. So if you order the tile, I'm the one making it. Oh. Yeah, pretty cool.
There's a lot of good tile in Portland, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
There are smaller pieces here which are just like one slide on a little wooden frame. I guess this is for the market, right? You're trying to sell these one at a time.
Hey, I gotta pay the bills. The reality was that I am not selling my specimen piece, and I do get inquiries about purchasing it.
Oh yeah, NFS, not for sale.
It's just, it lives in my studio. I look at it every time I go to my studio, and it is a piece of me. It is something that's so special. I just don't think I could, at this point, let go of it. So I wanted to create smaller pieces where people could take a little slice of specimen home. And I'm really passionate about having art at all price points.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with my good friend Taka. He's a woodworker here in Portland. Shout out to Taka. If you need cool furniture or good frames, Taka's the guy.
What's his name?
His name is Takahiro Moriki.
Okay. He made all the frames? Did he make the original one?
He made the original case for specimen, and he made the smaller pieces that are called particles. So I wanted to create smaller ones so that way I could let people, you know, take a little slice of it, even though I'm not letting go the big piece. And there's nothing more than I love than knowing that these 10 little companion pieces will be out floating in the world, you know, in people's homes, and usually people I know, and that makes me just feel so special.
You got a therapist who told you what's wrong with you. And is he trying to like medicate it out of you?
No, that's a really wonderful question, actually, because I like to compare managing my bipolar 2 or managing any mental health disorder with having a toolbox. And there are many things in my toolbox. Therapy is one. Medication is one. I frequently change medications throughout the year because my bipolar is real cyclical and has a real strong tie to the seasons. Other tools in my box are exercise, socialization. If I'm feeling depressed, I have a real tendency to isolate myself, and that just makes it worse. Sunlight, getting sunlight every day. This is Portland. We all struggle with this. People with bipolar really struggle with this because of our tie to the circadian rhythm. So using my sun lamp and making sure I get outside in the afternoons is a real important aspect of that's a tool in my toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my therapist and I will speak about the goal being maybe one day to go off of medication, and that it is entirely possible. It's just a matter of having a good enough toolbox with enough tools to make up for that deficit.
Oh, okay.
So it's on my radar, and I think it's definitely possible for myself, for others, to manage themselves without medication. For now, you know, I'm 4 years into this diagnosis, so I'm still feeling pretty new at it, and life has a tendency to throw things at you, and sometimes when life throws you things, the medication is really an amazing tool for consistency. You know, if I'm doing a big art push, or, you know, say, you know, something happens to somebody I love, or I have to, you know, change a big thing about my life, it's really helpful to have medication there for it. You know, bipolar can be exacerbated or made worse by outside triggers. It's good for that. And it can also be made worse just because it feels like it. So for now, I'm really happy that I have somebody that I can work with for my medication, and I consider it one of my most useful tools. And, and I wouldn't knock it.
But if someone said, hey, ask this retreat, and you're going to have a 10-day episode, creative episode, would you take it?
Oh, no, because I know the price that it would cost. You know, if I were to choose to be in a hypomanic state, you know, this is kind of a good question that a lot of people with bipolar 2 consider. You know, if I could flip a switch and have hypomania on demand, damn, that would be real useful. However, it doesn't come out of a spigot and without cost. And I know that when I am hypomanic, my relationships suffer. You know, certain aspects of my life suffer, and I don't think that's something I would choose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as the bursts that I used to experience were crucial and good for my artistic practice, something else was usually suffering for it.
Great. Thanks for being so open about it.
Yeah, of course.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week